Okay, we're in chapter 5 today. It's one of those topics that the Lord has chosen to repeat to us over and over and over again. It might be the most repeated subject. When you put all of it together, start in chapter 2 for some verses. Chapter 5 is covered with it. Chapter 6 toward the end covers it again, and then back to chapter 7. So what that tells us is this is important to the Lord. And what's important to the Lord is important to us. The way this world is going today, 48% of the marriages end in divorce.
Yeah.
And I dare say 90% of that 45% or 50%, whatever it is because of adultery. So God knows that the family, His family, us, need to know how He expects us to maintain a happy marriage. So if you've got a little pencil, this is the way I approach one of these chapters. The first two verses, the writer here is appealing to strict attention. He says, I've got something to tell you that's very important. I want you to listen to me. So he tries to get your attention. Verses 3 through 6 is a description of the loose woman, which is the main part of this whole chapter. Verses 7 and 8 is his plea for us to avoid such a woman. When I say woman here, I want you to understand it's generic. It includes the man. There are silver-tongued men out there in this world. Verses 9 through 14 is a warning of what does happen to you if you don't heed this advice. Chapters 15 through 19 is a call to cherish the holy love of marriage that God intended for it to be. And then verses 20 through 23 is a reminder that adultery is a sin against God.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sin against others, but there's also, it's a direct sin against God. All right, so let's go back to verses 1 and 2 and see what we can get out of verses 1 and 2 and 5. He says, my son, pay attention to my wisdom. And Solomon, if anybody had wisdom on this, he knew all about what this subject matter was about. In fact, I think he knew so much of harm. He, relative to other historian or famous people in the Bible, Solomon had a very short life compared to some of the others. So he knew what it caused him and what he had done or what he was guilty of when he got through. So he makes it a point to try to say, listen, I learned this. I learned it the hard way. So let me talk to you. So it's a plea to get attention indicates the importance of the severe warning he's going to talk about, which is adultery. And I told you it was a subject that we briefly mentioned in chapter 2, verses 16 through 19. So we got a hint that was coming up, and now we're going to get into the real subject matter here. The writer will return to the subject, as I told you, he's going to chapter 6, the latter part of it, and then all of chapter 7. So let's go back into the verse. We keep this all straight. My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Lend your ear to my understanding that you may preserve discretion. in Proverbs, the sin of the flesh, which does anybody know what they all are? Wine bibbing, fornicators, adultery. And this fits right into this. Adultery fits right into those sins of the flesh. It's a good possibility that Solomon put overwhelming emphasis on this because of these were the very sin that really ruined his life. Mm-hmm. In verses 3 through 6, we're going to go to who the woman is. For the lips of an immoral woman drops honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. The lips of a strange woman. It didn't matter whether she's a Jewish or whether she's heathen. She's a strange woman. It drops honey means that's a metaphor for she makes attractive proposals to you. She appears desirable, but leads to remorse and death. It says her mouth is smoother than oil. You know, David used these same terms as a metaphor when he was describing the treachery of his friend Ahithophel in Psalms 55:21. Someone turned to that. Remember, David is the father of Solomon. So Solomon got this wording from his dad. Psalms 55, verse 21. What does that say? Whoever gets it. Verse 21.
His talk is smooth as butter, yet war is in his heart. His words are more soothing than oil, yet they are drawn swords.
So this was supposed to be a good friend of Solomon's. But yet he was plotting. He was flattering the words. He was smoother than oil, he said. So it's quite possible that Solomon picked this up from the description that his dad got. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood. Wormwood was a very, very bitter taste. It's a terrible consequence of which in the end, she is bitter as wormwood. That's a terrible consequence of sinful gratification. And it's going to be plainly identified in this chapter as to what all this is all about. She may seem like honey. She may seem like honey, but those who have dealings with her find her that she has a biting taste as wormwood. Wormwood, by the way, is an insecticide. It is made to kill worms. It's drawn from a shrub in preparation of absinthia, which is a chemical that will kill worms. And it has a very, very, very bitter taste. It's actually a medicine for deworming. It says in verse 4, but in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her step lay hold of hell. Strong word in here. Strong word here. Her feet go down to death. Sinful sexual relations literally bring death to myriads of mankind. We know the diseases of syphilis. I mean, they killed before they finally found a cure for that. AIDS, which went on for years before they finally found a cure for that. And there's a new one popped up called monkeypox. Mm-hmm. These have literally killed millions of many, many. I'm not going to say, I don't know how many millions it has killed because of illicit sex. It says that death goes along with physical death goes along with spiritual death that they suffer. He used the word sheol here. Sheol is a synonym for death, by the way. When you see that word used in here, it's a synonym for death. Lest you ponder her path of life, her ways are unstable, you do not know them. she is, to paraphrase this, as in another Bible says, she findeth not the level page of life. Reckless blindness. They will not think when you get into this, get involved in this. You're actually teetering on the abyss of falling into something you can't control and you can't get yourself out of. You're ignoring what's going to happen to you in the future because of the consequences of what you're getting yourself into. In verses 7 and 8, hold on down if you would. In 7 and 8, it says, therefore hear me now, my children, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Here's a plea that he's making to the Lord again. It's a plea. This temptation to do this must be even avoided. In order to be successfully resisted, the temptation of it, you just don't go around or get yourself involved into situations that could lead to this. The TV programs that they have on there, and I don't watch them, but I see them flashing on through there. The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, the Los Angeles, the Beverly Hills Housewives. I'll tell you, all of those programs go right to this matter. All of them discuss it, all of them act like it's just an everyday thing. Mm-hmm. It's a casual thing. It won't hurt you. Timothy 2:22. Let me turn to that for you, if you would. Here's a New Testament warning to us that Paul gave to Timothy. Because it's almost identical to that. Must be 2 Timothy that I'm supposed to have here. Is it 2 Timothy? 2:22. Here you go. Paul's advice on this. Flee youthful lusts, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. Stay away from it. Flee it. Don't even go there. Don't even let your mind be poisoned by this stuff that you see on TV that the world is trying to get you involved in. Verse 9. Lest you give your honor to others and your ears to the cruel one, lest aliens be filled with your wealth and your labors go to the house of a foreigner. The evil results of this kind of relationship with a strange woman will fall basically into three categories. There's a loss of wealth there and your position. You've lost your own honor, and it's quite possible that when it ends up in the divorce, you're going to lose most of your wealth. Even if it doesn't end up in divorce, you'll lose a lot of your wealth. Physical deterioration takes place. You become worried. You become anxious. You're worried about who's going to find out, who's going to do this, what's going to happen next. So it's always on your mind. The legal penalties we get involved in here, particularly when there's divorce, there's legal penalties involved. So you can end up with a whole bundle of extra problems that you didn't count on when you fall into this. But the whole thrust of this passage is that it's unlawful, it's promiscuous, sex destroys the participants socially. You'll find out you pull away from your friends or they'll pull away from you. It'll stress you financially. It'll stress you morally. It'll corrupt your morals.
Mm-hmm.
And even physically, such an activity is a sin against society. It's a sin against the family. It's a sin against your own body. It's a sin against the church. And most of all, it's a sin against God Himself. The consequences of this.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 10. Lest aliens be filled with your wealth. How can this happen? How can aliens be filled with your wealth? Such activities as prostitution and adultery bring poverty. They bring legal penalties. Blackmail gets involved a lot of times. And there have been crooked policemen or detectives who have blackmailed what they found. So a lot of illegal activities, a lot of money can be lost over this. In verse 11 it says, and you mourn at last when your flesh and your body are consumed and say, how I've hated instruction and my heart despised correction.
That's dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Mm-hmm. But it's unfortunate that far too many think that they got it. They understand. They say, I got this. Fall into the worldly trap, and they fell through that slippery slope when they wouldn't listen or even pay attention or heed the instruction. Unfortunately, in the military, it's happened far too many times. I've seen it as a supervisor and as a first sergeant. It's what happens with situations when soldiers get caught up with... Got caught up, I guess, got caught up, and so, unfortunately, we see the repercussions of all that. So I've seen it firsthand, and what it does to other people, probably more so than I care to know about, but nonetheless, that's part of the job. And so, being able to admonish, provide guidance and wisdom, It's coming from experience. And two, when you smell a skunk, you don't necessarily have to see it to know that it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I use that as an example because when I see certain situations, even in my son's relationship, there's a skunk in the woodpile.
Mm-hmm.
There is. It's unfortunate.
That I'm glad you mentioned the military. Most of us are grown adults, and most of us, I would say, all of us don't have a problem with this, maybe this specifically, but the other sins that go with it, the lust of the eye, you know, the covetousness and the other things that go along with it. By us concentrating on programs that we shouldn't be watching or reading books or looking at pictures or whatever, you know, whatever you want to call it. But for a young fellow to go into the service, particularly if he goes in there like out of high school, it's a whole new world to him.
Mm-hmm. But that's true. I understand where you're coming from, but it was the same for me. Because I went through that. And because of the grace of God, I came through that. And it's because we had a spiritual relationship with God. Even though it was young and fledgling, immature in the spiritual sense, but we had God. We had Christ. We had the church. We had His blessings and His help through all that. And so, and again, I thank God for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it wasn't for Him, it could have been, I think, like where you're going, said, yeah, it could have been caught up in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to be in the military to be caught up in the world. it happens with any profession. Mm-hmm. Nurses and doctors and firemen, and you name it. It's everywhere.
It's not limited.
No, it's not. But see, and the opportunity when they go off to college, again, even in the Christian colleges, because they're becoming too secular, too worldly. But again, the point being that we who've been down the road, as you say, we're more mature, when we look back in our past, you can't help but give God the glory for his kindness, for his mercy, for his second chances, third chances, fourth chances, and then come to learn more of him and love him and embrace him and develop that maturity of a strong spiritual relationship with our God through Jesus Christ, and understanding that if it wasn't for Christ coming back from the grave, none of this would be worth the breath of breathing. And again, we thank God for that. And so that's why it's imperative, as we all know, and again, we have the challenge. When we look in, even among ourselves, where's our youth? Where's our young women? Where's our young men following us? They're not here. But when we do see them, we have a very little opportunity to find out and to educate them, to encourage them. Why haven't you put on Christ? Why haven't you? Because whatever reason, we need to figure out why and show them in the instruction that you're not guaranteed tomorrow.
Yeah. And that's the basis and core of this class right here. It's something that we have got to pass on. We all got grandchildren. We all got children. We all got friends. We got people that we know people who are involved in this now. Some of us do. And we sat down and told them the consequences. It's a sin against God Almighty. No way is he going to let an adulterer come into heaven, an unrepentant adulterer come into heaven. So this class is, maybe it's not intended for us here as far as the consequences of it, but certainly the responsibility of passing it on to those that we know and that we love. We care about it. You pass it on if you care about it. Yeah, Kathy.
And I was thinking too, you know, as you're trying so hard to teach your children and grandchildren how wonderful it is to have a good family, God-fearing family, but they start to get down that road, you have to remind them that how it tears up the family. People divorce all the time, and they think nothing of it, and they think, it's all about me. This is my life. I'll do whatever I want. You know, it's just all about me. But that person they were married to is now part of your family. And when people get married, we have to remind them what that is. It is a sacred bond between you and God. And when you break that up, God hates divorce and adultery and all that stuff. So if we just love them and continue to encourage them, like Chuck said, it's so important. That in itself, to me, is the biggest. Well, not the biggest, because God hates it too. But second biggest is that how it tears your family up. You're not going to get past that. Oh, okay, they just got a divorce. No biggie. No! That was my son-in-law. That was my daughter-in-law. That was part of me. God put us together. And when you mess that up, you're tearing me up. And that's what hurts.
It affects the whole family, not just the two people. It affects family relations. It affects everything. Yeah. If we don't take this on, the schools are taking it on. By the way, for us, the elementary schools even are starting to take care of our little kids or take hold of our little kids by teaching them things that they're trying to teach them. It's normal. Yeah, it's normal. If you want to be a girl, little boy, we'll show you how you can be a little girl. If you want to be a transsexual, with no problem with that. We'll teach you how to do that. If you want to see what a combined family looks like of all three or four different people, the schools are taking hold of this, and that's scary to me, because if we don't have the kids when they're very young and get them in here to know what's right and wrong, they hardly stand a chance because they have great respect for these teachers out there, and they believe everything they tell them.
College is really bad about it.
Oh, yeah.
College is really bad about it.
Yeah. I'm sure, well, you guys, right, you had two girls that just recently got through that thing, and so they can tell you some stories. But it's not just any college. It's gone down to some of the religious colleges, too.
Yeah.
It's all about don't rock the boat. You know, you're going to offend somebody if you say something about that. You're going to offend somebody. Chuck, you get you say something?
Well, not that it matters a lot, but it seems to me that when you gave your word the first time to somebody and you broke it, how are you going to keep your vow the second time?
That suspicion is always there.
Right, it's always there. It's just same with anything else. So if somebody said, hey, I'm going to finance your house, and then it falls through, and then they say, well, we can try it again. So, you know, I don't think I'll go somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just,
okay, let's get back in here. It says, verse 12, it says, how I've hated destruction, how I've hated instruction in my heart, despised correction, I have not obeyed the voice of my teachers. You know, even more bitter than poverty or disease would be the fact that you had a chance and you denied it. You hated it, you didn't want to hear it. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that.
And that point I think he's making here is that this in this example, they are adamant. They have made a decision that no, I will not listen to you. I won't accept it. I won't hear it.
Why? They'll see and put the I won't hear that.
This is an action on their part.
Yeah. Yeah, when verse 13, neither have I obeyed the voice of my teachers. It's an admission that he had teachers. It's an admission that he had them. And he had advisors that were giving him good advice. But he gave no heed to their warnings. And he did not listen to them at all. Verse 14. He says, I was on the verge of a total ruin in the midst of the assembly and of the congregation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this sin is like a whirlwind, a whirl thing. It sweeps in other sins. First thing comes with lies. You got to tell lies to get yourself out of it. And this has a group of sins that goes with it. When you get involved in the sin, then you got cousins of the sin that's going to come on in with it. And then sometimes they stay for a long time. Lying will be a great part of that right there. Verses 15 through 19, this is where he calls for the church for holy love in marriage. And these verses are really the heart of the chapter here. They exalt and lay out to us what is considered a great marriage relationship. In verse 15, he says, drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. These are metaphors from your wife. No other woman but your wife. 16, springs and streams are metaphors of one's children, by the way. When it says springs and streams, and they're dispersed abroad, children of adultery, particularly in that day, but it's still true today, are dispersed abroad and found in the streets. Some of them don't even know who their parents are.
Mm-hmm. It's a shame.
Don't even know who their parents are.
Mm-hmm.
Promiscuity and unlawful sex acts throw doubt on the paternity of children. Remember, in those days, there wasn't such a thing as a birth control pill or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine a great majority of even the slightest sex relations probably ended up with children.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So verse 19, says, as a loving deer and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times and always be enraptured with her love. Again, referring to the wife. In the Arabian and Persian portrait of that day, the antelope and the deer are the chosen images of beauty, by the way. So he's paying the highest compliment to someone's wife. In Acts 9:36, the Christian woman Dorcas, that name was translated to Tabitha, and both of them means gazelle. That gazelle, that deer, that beautiful animal. So the aromatic versions of that same word. Verses 20 to 23 is a reminder that adultery is a sin against Job. He says, "For why should you, son, be enraptured by an immoral woman and be embraced in the arms of a seductress?" Ravished here is a key word. It's the same thing as infatuated. Why are you so infatuated? Why could you be so infatuated that you would cause this great sin? Or intoxicated by her, or him, or smitten. You've heard that word, smitten.
Mm-hmm.
She's smitten with him. The ways of man are before the eyes of Jehovah. God's law brings the husband's conduct into this relationship, by the way, at the end of this chapter, with the duty that we owe to God Almighty. When Joseph was tempted by Potiphar, you remember what he said? He says, "How can I do this great sin of wickedness and sin against my God? How can I do it?" Potiphar's wife, you know, I can't do this against God. That's in Genesis, by the way, 39. This great wickedness of sin is against our society. It's against our own family. It's against our church. It's against our own body. And above all, it's a sin against God. Verse 22-23, his own iniquities shall take the wicked. In greatness of his folly, he shall go astray. It's important to note that the verses here place the blame exactly where it belongs. Not particularly on the woman, but also on the man.
Yes.
Whose wickedness is spelled out to us. Verse 23, he says, he shall die for lack of instruction. He shall die for lack of discipline. He had instruction, by the way, but he didn't have discipline. He had a teacher, but he wouldn't listen. He had some advice, but he wouldn't listen. So he had some instructions, but he didn't have any discipline. So because of that, his condition ends up in death. If not death here on this earth, there's an eternal death that he will suffer. I hope by getting into this and emphasizing that God, through his inspired word, repeats it so many times that there's a point here that we've got to fathom. This mindset has got to become our mindset. His thoughts have got to become our thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas the pertinence of it right to us immediately here, we've got children and we got grandchildren and we got friends and we got neighbors that we know that we'll have an opportunity to talk to and to persuade. Carl, I don't know whether Jonathan ever told you or not, but just before he was going off to the military, I took him aside in one of these rooms there and told him what the world was like out there and how, particularly around military bases, these type of women and type of men, I don't say all women, make livings by preying on innocent young boys. And I hope that had some effect on him. And I did it because a member of my distant family, mm-hmm. went into the service and got caught up in that. Mm-hmm. The it was a military group, three guys and a military woman go off for a weekend somewhere, and then she hollers rape, and one thing leads to another court, and comes as whatever. It's almost destroyed him as far as his future, because that's on his record forever. And he was just a young fellow that got caught up in it. But anyway, I hope you get something out of this lesson. And we'll come back to it in the latter part of the next chapter of chapter 6. That's it for today.
Good, brother.
Thank you, sir.